You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers, and it's Monday, which means we're going back in time and rewatching the Pacers finals, continuing through that game two today. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, covering the Pacers for Forbes, the West Indianapolis Community News, and the Fieldhouse. Joining me to talk Pacers-Lakers game two from 2000, Adam Friedman. Adam, how's it going?
Pretty well. I couldn't tell if you were screaming there or whether I had the volume up too high because you sounded really loud and excited to start the show.
Wow. Is my mic working? That could be the problem here.
Your mic is working. It just sounded like you. I mean, it might be my volume was up high. I was on a Zoom call with my family and I made the mistake of turning it up all the way and then it just left it there.
I'm always excited to talk basketball. See, this week would have been one of my favorite weeks, Adam, where I sacrifice you to the lamb because you live in Central Time and the Pacers go on the West road trip, so I make you do all the recaps because they would be at like 1 a.m. for me.
Yeah, well, I did them already, but yes, it would be even better.
No, they'd be in Sacramento, LA this week, like in real life.
Yeah, which are easy for me to do because it's only like by 11 o'clock my time.
I hate it.
Well, isn't one of them probably on a Sunday, so we would have to do it anyways, and that would have been
today, Sunday, they would have been in Sacramento.
Remember that Portland game before Vic returned, and they played to like, I think they started like maybe 7 my time, or maybe, and they played super late, and you were like, that or the Denver one, you were so pissy to come on and do it.
I know. Yeah, my gosh. The Denver one I was hyped for about.
Yeah, Denver, I think it was the Portland one. They scored 140 points, but lost still, and they played, Lillard had like 70. But
Well, speaking of playing in L.A., Finals game two, Pacers-Lakers time in L.A. Me and Adam had a lot of fun, of course, watching the second game. I'm learning so much about gaps in my knowledge, right? Like, I get why I always thought Austin Crozier was like a cult hero because he like tried hard and stuff, but.
No, he was a good player, man.
Dude's legit good and scrappy. Jalen Rose was awesome in this game. John Washburn, one of my colleagues at the Fieldhouse, thinks Jalen Rose was the best player on the Pacers in this series. And that's what tomorrow's show is going to be about. Washburn's going to join me. So we'll talk about that. Where should we start with this game? I thought the most interesting thing, I guess I want to talk about the pregame show first, because I thought it was so interesting the way they talked about Reggie going 1-for-16 and then Reggie himself being like, no, I was literally open the whole game. Like, if I get the same shots, I will do better this game. And he did. He had more points in the first quarter than he did the entire first.
He made 6 more shots. It was 7-for-16.
So. Yeah. He was much better. Well, the like first 3 Pacers possessions, they just like – so I appreciate the announcers breaking this down early because it's hard. Like, we watch these games a week apart, so I don't remember as much from the prior game. But, like, they forced Reggie to go to the left side a lot of the court. So when he drives left hand, which he prefers to do, he's going baseline instead of to the middle. The first 3 Pacers possessions of this game, they got him the ball on the right wing and just cleared out. Ron Harper had 2 fouls in like 2 minutes, and Reggie was just torching him, getting to the line, hitting a shot. And it was a total turnaround and impact for him early. And that was when Kobe was still playing, so he was just torching the Lakers early.
Yeah, well, what I noticed too was once Kobe went out, Jalen Rose really caught fire. Partially, I mean, he was out, right? Jalen Rose seemed to be like freed. I guess we never talk about Kobe's defense, but I think at this point, right, he was probably 21 years old right in this game.
Well, he was a good defender at this point, yeah.
Right. It was. I think it's kind of compared to the young Paul George, right? Paul George first like couple years when he became kind of superstar was because his defense and his offense was kind of like a secondary level to that amazing defense. And then eventually he transitioned to more of an offensive player and less of a like best defensive player in the league. But you see from a lot of young guys to make the name for themselves is defense, and you saw from Kobe. And the thing that shocked me the most is once Kobe went out, it felt like the Pacers should have won this game. And then it also felt like the Lakers were basically Shaq and a bunch of scrubs and somehow Shaq and a bunch
their,
of scrubs.
Their other guards did pretty well, right? Glenn Rice making every 3 he took is the reason the Lakers won this game because the Pacers we're a little high level here and we're kind of disrupting the flow from start to finish, but that's fine.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. There's a lot that happened here. Glenn Rice was 5-for-6 from deep. And like the strategy when Kobe came out was like, cool, they just have Shaq to score. We are going to drill this dude. Like they let him shoot 39 free throws. They don't care. He only hit 18 of them. It was the most blatant hack of Shaq I've ever seen. There was one in the fourth quarter. I think it was a 3 or 4 point game where Reggie told the ref after the Pacers scored, he's like, I'm going to foul Shaq. I tweeted the video because it was so funny. And then he was like hugging him and squeezing him and they're not calling a foul and the clock's ticking. And then Reggie all of a sudden like starts ripping his jersey and screaming and jumping. It's like, they were so obviously trying to foul him. They were literally just telling the refs, like, we're fouling Shaq, because it was the easiest way to slow down the Lakers. They were getting less than a point every time per possession, basically. And
well, and Shaq shot 61%, so they've lob out. Yeah. Better him to go one or two in the line and make a shot.
Right. And Shaq put the game away with an assist, which we'll get to the end later. But that was their strategy. When Kobe was out, it's like, okay, they finally don't have a secondary guy who can kill us. Let's just destroy Shaq. I don't care if he scored. Because another thing they talked about pregame show was Shaq in two of the three series prior to this had over 40 in the first game and then like 20 in the second game. So it's like, okay, the teams kind of switched their game plan against Shaq game two. And the Pacers kind of did that in the 8 minutes, 9 minutes Kobe was out there. And then as soon as Kobe rolled his ankle on a no offense to Jalen Rose, a bullshit closeout by Jalen Rose.
Yeah.
They just fouled Shaq like crazy, and Glenn Rice just bailed him out. I mean, if he doesn't hit five threes, if he hits three threes, the Pacers are probably win this game, because the 7 points is not reflective of how close this was. It was a 3-point game with like 2 minutes to go, and Lakers just
it was like a completely back and forth game. I mean, they were tired. It was always within 3 or 4 to 5 points the entire time till the end, basically. Like I said, when I go back to what I said about Shaq, was that it felt like I think of the right comparison, but I felt like Shaq was basically playing with four guys who he just basically had to like lift up almost in a way, right? So like he was drawing double teams. He was basically being fouled all the time. It was like, can any of these basically scrub guys around him step up? And that's kind of what it took for the win this game. I mean, I think first thing you say is, well, Shaq scored 40 points, 24 runs. He helped win the game, but really he was going to do that no matter what, right? And most scenarios where like Kobe's healthy or not, Shaq was going to score 30 plus points with 15 plus rebounds, right? You needed somebody else to score 20 to win the game, right? If Shaq had scored 50, they might have still won this game, because he would have had, maybe you have Glenn Rice not make six, you know, take six threes because Shaq takes away five of his shots, right? I mean, there's that whole part of it. So it felt like it was one of the classic games where you need one of your role players step up, and
they got it.
I mean, for the Pacers, especially in their history wise, some random role player, whether it's James Jones hitting 4 threes in the game. Game 6 or game 7 of a Eastern Conference Finals, like time and time again, these random, you know, kind of history on the NBA history blips and the radars carry the day and kind of put another nail in the Pacers' coffin.
And this is a home game role player thing, right? Like if this game's in Indiana, the Pacers win for sure if Kobe gets hurt. Like it's over.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
The Lakers, at this point, the Lakers too have this like invincibility about them in a way. I mean, right? They won 16 plus games. They had probably made it through what was probably a tougher West Conference. The Blazers are probably the second best team in the league this year. So I mean,
yeah, they were really good.
I mean, not in the Pacers, but the East was just not. It was kind of just inferior. Now,
the Knicks were good.
Spurs were good. Weren't the Spurs good this year? Was this one of the, right? The Spurs lost.
Yes, Spurs were good.
I mean, the West was much better than the East. I mean, it was night and day, right? I mean, you really had basically out East, you had the Ewingless Knicks, right? And that kind of whatever team that made the finals last year, the year previous year, but got knocked out by the Spurs pretty quickly. And then you had the kind of first year of the good Iverson Sixers out East. That was it, though. But at West, you just had a much better line. I mean, I think you still had the tail end of Malone and Stockton, right? I think you had that team. You had Blazers. You had Spurs. I mean, you just had better teams, it felt like, out East and whatnot. But from this game, like I said, one thing that kind of stands out to me is just the fact that the Pacers, again, get beat by some kind of role blip player, basically. Because I don't think Shaq really beat him, to be honest. I mean, he beat him at the end of the class, but I think Shaq was going to get what he's going to get no matter what.
No, yeah, I was going to say, Shaq didn't do what he did in game one where he elevated them to unbeatable. He was still really good, but he wasn't the MVP level that made the Lakers so good. It was that, I agree with you, Ron Harper, who was so aggressive in this game. Two fouls in the first 2 minutes and just totally picked it up. The rest of the game was like macho aggressive, shot really well from the field, was getting into the paint, 6 assists. Yeah, and then Glenn Rice hit a bunch of threes. And some of Glenn Rice's threes, and by some I mean a lot, were because they were doubling Shaq a lot. So it was kind of like they were willing to concede this to slow him down, but it did not work.
Yeah, and I mean, we can talk about the pace for a few minutes, but to me,
if they had
won this game, I think it probably would have been the Jalen Rose or Austin Crozier game, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Probably Austin Crozier game, right?
Crozier game, yeah. 12 free throws. Man, Crozier was balling getting into the paint inside.
I mean, to me, this is where you said it. You said it before the show where you didn't realize how good he was, really. And it's kind of showed, he was actually a really good player. Like, I mean, he went toe-to-toe, I thought, with some of the Lakers. I mean, he basically got in Derek Fisher's face. Wow. Derek Fisher's face towards the end of the game. I mean, he was like – He might have been the Patriots' best offensive player on the night almost.
Yeah, he was – nah, I don't know about that.
Rose, yeah, Rose is pretty good.
Rose played the entire game, which yeah. unheard of in the modern era. Like,
and he injured another team's best player, so or second best player, so he really did a lot. Really,
Shaq played 45 minutes. Even that's a lot in the modern NBA. Like Jalen Rose playing 48 minutes. The more I watch, like, it's funny
but because – it's actually not for the playoffs, actually.
All the old head people who are like – NBA is soft these days. Like, Jalen Rose playing 48 minutes, yeah, that gives you credence to your softness. But I don't feel like these games are, like, that much more physical than modern.
No, but remember, in the playoffs, guys up their minutes a ton. I mean,
that's fair. Not like to 48.
LeBron 40. No, but LeBron had a couple games in his, like, peak 45. Era where he was trying to win a title where he played 48 minutes a game. I mean.
48? No way.
45. Yeah, against the Celtics game 6 and 7 in 2013. Go look it up. He played 48 minutes. He did not sub himself out. He's literally – you know, I was looking in the playoffs last year.
Like 6 years after this.
What?
That was only like 6 years after this finals, right?
No, I'm talking about LeBron's run against the Celtics in 2013.
Oh, the Heat.
Celtics. The Heat run, not the previous run. LeBron in that game against the Pistons in the playoffs in 07, played 50 minutes. I mean, they went over.
That was overtime, but yeah, that's true.
I mean, if you look at the playoffs, right, I think this year alone, or last year alone, wasn't Leonard playing like 42 minutes a game in the playoffs?
Yeah, that's like the modern era equivalent of
playing. Yeah, but I mean, that's what I mean. When it comes to the finals, and you know, there's kind of the like there's an other side of the road, right? You know that there's only going to be an infinite amount of minutes left. You're willing to play more and push your body to more.
Right.
Or like in game 40 of races where you know you got to kind of rush yourself for the playoffs, right? That's why, because Shaq knows if he doesn't play 45 minutes or really play 40 minutes, there's no more minutes to play in a week or two, right? So if you don't play that many minutes, don't play that well, and don't push yourself to that level, then it's not going to matter. Basically.
So Rose was really good for most of the 48 minutes. He wasn't awesome. Like, I think 30 points in 48 minutes is a little misleading about how good he was, because he kind of just shot okay. Like, he was really good getting to the line and beating defenders. He had a bunch of rebounds. He was clearly very good on defense, but like, I don't know. He never like wowed me with his scoring or anything. It was just like pretty good.
So I think too, you have to remember that the efficiency numbers are a lot different back then, right? So
absolutely. No, he didn't take 1-3.
Right. And so, like, I'm not sure 44% is really – I mean, in that era is pretty good. I mean, obviously, you have Shaq, who is, like – he's, like,
the leading shooter that game.
Of the post, right? He's just a cheat code down low, right?
Right.
Shoot, like, you take his post-game percentage, it probably equals James Harden from three-point percentage. You add in the points per shot value.
Oh, way higher.
You think it's way higher? Probably, yeah, he gets 1 point. Well, he gets 1.2 points from this game for every shot, right? That's what he
averaged. Yeah, Harden's not a 40% 3-point.
Yeah, Harden. I'm maybe thinking Steph Curry at his peak, right? Steph Curry probably is where they compare points per shot. But I mean, I think overall, first of all, to take 23 shots, I mean, somebody has to take the shots, right? I mean,
right.
That's part of it. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if 44% back then is that bad.
It wasn't bad. It's just not like overwhelmingly dominant.
No, but his free throw line numbers were pretty dominant.
He was great. Getting to the line, getting into the paint. That's where he was really good.
Yeah, I mean,
that's where him being like the secondary guy all the time was really good, because Mark Jackson could get him the ball going at the right spots. Jackson, really good setup man, 8 assists this game. Mark Jackson, sneaky close to a triple-double this game if he could actually hit a damn
two-pointer. If he scored 8 points in his life.
If he hit a damn two-pointer, he would have got it. Yeah, but that's where Rose was really good. And the free throw line was the Pacers' saving grace this game. They had 39 attempts. I mean, Shaq had that many himself, but they made 33 of them. Shaq made
7 attempts for the Lakers.
Yeah.
I don't understand the era, how you – like Shaq as a human being just makes no sense, I guess, to me. You know what I mean? Like, just watching him, like, right? Like imagine if a guy like him entered the NBA today with the touch around the rim and that size. I mean, I don't know. It just seems impossible.
There's no one like him right now. Like, I mean, Boban is close, but he can't play 45 minutes and jump and defend and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of reiterates again how unique Shaq was.
I know, it's weird. Like, I knew he was really good, but I'm surprised at how frequently he is compared to the top five greats.
So, have you ever read David Epstein's sports science book?
No, I have not.
So I think in a book he says like, 1 out of every 10 person over 6'10 plays in the NBA. Like, in the world or something like that. Like, 11% is what it's
out of like the 70 people who are over 7 feet tall, like a crazy percentage of
it. I really wonder in 2000 what that percentage was, right? I mean, maybe nowadays what happened was because the game expanded internationally so much, there's just so many guys at 7 feet where like in 2000, I mean, I can think of a few, right? Robinson was.
Smits.
Duncan was close. Shaq. But, like, they're just – Hakeem, but he's kind of towards the end of this point, right? I'm not sure if he still played 2000.
That's why centers were so good.
Right. That's well, what happened is the center was such a good position or such a valuable spot that teams started hunting for in every which way possible, scanning the globe, scanning every corner, that they eventually devalued it almost in a way because they got so many of them.
Smits is fascinating to watch. Like, the shots he chooses at 7'4" is so interesting. I know that's what he was good at, but it's just
– Yeah, it seemed like he should have just been sitting down in the post the entire game.
Like, they have Dale Davis do the tip-off, and Smits has got him by, like, 7 inches.
You wonder if they should have just basically run, like, a game where Smits has the ball in the post, backing up, and kicks it out to everybody around him to shoot.
Modern NBA Smits would be so fun.
Well, in modern NBA, he would literally be standing – you would almost run everything out of the post through him. He would either get a dunk or he'd kick it out to one of your three-point shooters. I mean, that's what – That's what they should have done if you look at it, right?
He shoots a lot from the elbows. He loved that.
Yeah, well, that's, you know.
Flicky elbow shot.
I mean, if you think right, think about it now, the perfect Pacer lineup, right, like in this game, if you were playing modern NBA, it would have been Smith to the center, Crozier at like the four, Miller, Rose, and then Jackson, right? Somebody who's just a really good ball handler, right? And that way,
yeah. You
just put the three shooters.
Or Perkins, because he could shoot.
Yeah, maybe you sub out Perkins for Jackson. Crozier, but Jackson. I think you still want Mark Jackson's defense, probably.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
The other side of the floor. And he would be a better three-point shooter in this era. And if he's playing modern era, right, he would just have worked on it more.
Something that made me, like, smile the whole time, and as we're talking about the modern era, is they kept talking about how the Lakers had one guy who shot 36% from deep on the season. I believe it was Rice. And the Pacers had eight. It's like that was the Pacers were the best shooting team in the league that year. So that maybe in the modern NBA, this series goes a little different. Although Shaq would still just
Yeah, I mean, I think Shaq is still the cheat code, right? I mean, I think that's what the NBA is waiting for currently, right? It's waiting for some kind of Shaq level talent in the league and just completely screw up.
Embiid is trying.
He's just not. I mean, he's close, but it's just not the same. I don't know. And
it's not,
also, you have to build the right team around the guy. And Embiid has got good players, but the spacing is all screwed up, right? What you want around Embiid is four shooters who just can drain threes, not a Ben Simmons, theoretically.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other issue, right? I mean, like, yeah. You still have to build around the guy perfectly to make it work, right? But it's the same
Embiid
way
Embiid might be the closest we get for a while. Not that Embiid is close to Shaq now that I'm seeing Phoenix peak, but that might be the closest we get for a while.
Yeah, I mean, the thing like this, right, is just like the thing what Shaq could do and what Eris played is that it didn't matter who he had around him. He was going to carry them to a certain level. Where nowadays, because the team building is so important, whether you're even the Steph Currys, because you need all the shooters around the way they did that, to James Harden, to Embiid, that you can get the really unique player, but you have to build around him right to have any success, right? I mean, he said it on his too, right? With LeBron even, right? LeBron can only do so much. I mean, he could get the team to the finals, but to win a championship, you have to have still a good team. Where it felt like in the 2000 era, it's like just find – the best center you could find, and we'll win enough games, and we'll figure out the rest. It wasn't as much around building around them the same way.
Right.
Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by Postmates. Are you someone who starts thinking about dinner while you're eating lunch? Well, then you'll love Postmates, the food delivery from every restaurant right to your door. Especially nowadays, using Postmates is the perfect way to get all the places that deliver food right to your place. But Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi and food. They actually make life easier with grocery delivering and whatever you can think of they deliver as well. From convenience stores, drug stores, clothing stores, you name it. So no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs. I don't even think you have to worry about where to grab lunch anymore because Postmates is the place to go. Just download the Postmates app for iOS or Android and find your favorites of anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is offering Locked On Pacers listeners $100 of free delivery credit for their first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. That's the code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 free dollars delivery with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmate app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it.
Did you watch any of the pregame stuff, or did you just skip right to the action?
I kind of skimmed it. I did a little 5-second clip of YouTube and just kind of see. And when I saw a face I recognized, I just paused. Like, I saw, like, Peter Vesey, who was, like, an all-time sports guy. I saw Isaiah Thomas on the pregame, Walton. Is Susie Colbert, is that the one? Or is it – who was the host of the
– Michelle Beat, I think. I don't remember. I just watched it, and I don't remember.
I thought it was Susie Colbert, what it looked like to me.
You might be right.
Michelle – Beat? I don't think it was Michelle Beat.
Is that even a name? I don't know why that.
No, I think you're thinking Michelle Beadle, but she was much younger.
Oh, you're right. I'm an idiot.
It was either Susie Colbert or Linda Cohen. I can't remember which one.
You know, if only I could just literally pull it up and look.
Right, well, they don't put the name next to them half the time, so I don't know.
Yeah, they only put it up like right when they talk for the first time.
Yeah, well, half my struggle with this game is sometimes where like, you know, you skip to a commercial and you try to figure out, I'm trying to remember what the score is at like what time.
I know, they only show it like once every 2 minutes.
Or like I was trying to go back and be like, okay, where did Kobe get hurt? I just want to watch it again. I'm like, wait, well, it was like 8 minutes in, but there's no clock, so I have to kind of go. And the first 25 minutes are the pregame, so it's like just a mess.
Yeah. Oh, Lamisil being the ad. I really want this to get to the.
Oh, I say I have some good ads for you if you want to do that real fast.
Yeah. Well, what else besides Lamisil was there?
So Lamisil was the first one, which I think still exists, but I think it's not. It's like.
Hannah Storm, we're both dumb. Okay, go.
Net zero. Oh, Hannah Storm, that's right. Okay. There's three female ESPN anchors that are like been staples for like decades. Susie Colbert and Hannah Storm. And they're all very similar. They're just rarely good anchors. I always kind of mix them up in my mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
So Net Zero, which is some internet company, was the
internet
one.
Internet company.
So I think I might be watching the LA broadcast. It's an LA-based company, but I don't know if you got it on yours as well.
I had NBC, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I had NBC, but it might have been like, you know, I don't know if it's like the local NBC one.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know how like in Indiana, there'll be Indiana ads. I think this is the LA ad one. But it's some internet company that still exists, I was surprised by. But its tagline was, I think it was like, we defend, like your number one defense against something. I forget what it was now. I'm trying to find an ad now that says it. But it was, to me, it was interesting that and Lamisil, some foot cream, some fungus cream thing was it.
Really, yeah, at least foot cream. I think Brad Stevens did Lamisil commercials at one point at Butler.
Did he?
I don't remember.
Let's see.
So I brought up the pregame show because I wanted to talk about something they said the Pacers did.
Yeah.
They tried to simulate Shaq at practice.
Oh, God.
I never heard of this guy before. Okay. Zan Tabak. He played for 2 minutes in this game in the second quarter. Zan Tabak, Croatian center, 7 feet, 245. Okay, that's their Shaq simulation. So they're about 80 pounds and 3 inches short, but it's as close as they could get. They had to do something.
Is that why he was on the roster? I guess, and he ended up playing 2 minutes in this game.
He played in this game. He was on the Pacers roster 2 years in a row, but he only played 18 regular season games that year, and then
Right. You watch this game, and I just think Rick Spitz was so badly used, right? I mean, am I wrong? I mean, keep saying that. I mean, he just basically
didn't know at the time the way, like, how space.
No, I understand, but he's out there to foul Shaq 4 times to get out of the game.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very
young. Yeah, put in Tabak for these fouls, man. I know he had 3 in 2 minutes and 43 seconds.
Well, Spitz felt very Jan Mahimi 2014-13, where he would just come in and foul the hell out of LeBron and then leave.
Put in Jonathan Bender, let him hug Shaq 5 times and then take him out. 30 seconds, 5 fouls. That's it. That's what his stat line should look like.
Yeah.
That way you can save your fouls on.
Yeah, remember Ben.
Like Davis fouling out was a big deal, even though it was late in the game. But still,
Bender had a really bad back, so who knows if he can play at this point.
Yeah, that's true. There was so much interesting stuff. Crozier is fascinating to me. That
we talked about him for a few minutes. Like
he can dribble. He's a beast on the glass. He like wasn't even. He had no chance against Shaq, but he was not afraid. Like. He was legit good in this game as a slasher. He plays more like a wing than someone his size, I feel like.
So we did this last time too, but man, when you watch him in grainy footage, you just think Bojan. I think Bojan.
I know.
No, I agree. The thing I thought he was one super. I mean, I think the 2000 finals were probably his kind of shiny moment. Just a couple of these games he had where he had really good games. I mean.
That was his best season of his career.
Yeah, he would. But like, I think that's how he solidified himself on the Pacers for probably the next 3 or 4 years. I mean, he would be pretty crucial in their 2003, 2004 team.
He played for a lot of other teams. I can't even imagine him in a non-Pacers jersey.
Yeah, I mean, but he was. I mean, they were that 4 year run from this finals to their almost finals run 2003, 2004. He was a critical part of the team, and he was really good for them, especially in the playoffs. A lot of times he came up big.
And I just googled Crozier Mavericks to see him in a jersey. He looks like he's 6,000 years old. Yeah, absolutely. It's just like this is a back. This goes to your center point. Like this is a backup center in these times with the 7-footers. It's this 6'9" guy who's not really a center at all.
Yeah,
I know Davis was their nominal,
but he was sort of the first, I think, kind of stretch four. I mean, he played power forward and shot the three.
Smith.
You're talking about Spitz now?
That'd be Rick Smits was the stretch guy.
Oh, well, I mean, Crozier was the first kind of stretch four.
They were all over it. They had shooting everywhere. Bird, the shooting four was all over it. He was ready to coach these guys the way he likes to play.
Yeah. All right, I guess Bird was a stretch four-ish.
Who else stood out to you in this game?
So it's not a person, but I just noticed this because I was kind of surprised they got to this many points. But did you fall – so with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, the score was in the 80s. And it ended up being 111-104. And I was like –
Fouling at the end to make it high scoring.
But, I mean, basically the Lakers scored 25 points in 6 minutes. I mean, that's – by any center, that's pretty amazing.
That is wild. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
A lot of it was free throws, but
– 86-82 with 6:17 left. Now, I get a ton of free – I mean, the last 2 minutes were all free throws. Now, some of them were
– Yeah, with a minute to go, it was 96-99, and it ended 111-104.
Which just, to me, still is kind of – it was just dumbfounding. I was like – I thought it would be like, oh, it's going to be like 90-something, and they'll barely score because this is the slow era. But this was a 111-104 game, and that's what I'm talking about.
All right, here's 3:08 to go, the play-by-play for the Lakers. S. O'Neal misses free throw 1 of 2. S. O'Neal misses free throw 2 of 2. 2:35 to go. S. O'Neal makes free throw 1 of 2, misses 2 of 2. 2:12 to go. S. O'Neal misses free throw 1 of 2, makes free throw 2 of 2. They just were like, the only chance the Pacers had of staying in this game was foul this dude. Because the Robert Horry and one put it away because Shaq finally was able to pass the ball to someone else before he got fouled.
Yeah, if he didn't do that, the Pacers had a legit shot. They're only down three.
They were right there.
This is probably the game where if they get this game, they might have actually won this series.
I agree. Well, we'll talk about the overtime game 4 in 2 weeks.
They're
up in the series if they win. Well, they won game 5.
If they win this one, they're 1-1 heading home to Thursday home games.
For three straight, exactly. I mean, Kobe's injury, that was it. I didn't even know he got hurt in a game, man. Like, this is how little I knew of these
old. I mean, this is how the Pistons basically beat the Lakers 4 years later, as they took one of the first two games and never let it go back to Los Angeles.
Yep.
Which I guess maybe the one counter for Shaq finally was Ben Wallace. That's probably the one guy who could counter Shaq
in the NBA. Strong leaper, could defend everyone else. Yeah,
who could legitimately defend you without fouling you, who could shut down anything around the rim. I mean, he was – and then on top of that, the Pistons were just one hell of a deep team in their top five, at least. They had five legitimate players versus Lakers who were scrapping together with basically two.
They had five guys who were good on both ends of the
court,
which is just so hard to get.
The Pacers may have had a shot against the Lakers, though, I think, that year, too. They had made it.
In 04, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have liked to see. I mean, especially if Shaq and Kobe were as bad as chemistry as there was, and the Pacers were kind of, like, rolling that, like, Reggie's last season, one last season kind of thing, and you got Artest at his peak guarding Kobe, and you got Jermaine O'Neal just trying to match Shaq point for point. I mean, there's a chance there.
Yeah. They come back home after this. We'll do game 3 next week. You got anything else on this one?
I still keep going back to it. When you watch this game, Reggie is still underwhelming. Am I wrong?
Kinda.
I know he's gonna have big.
Clearly. So they ran a lot of floppy, and I know that floppy's been around in basketball for forever. But like, the Lakers did whatever they freaking could to deny him the ball on the right side of the court. And on the left side, he would dump it into the post a lot, or they'd switch. Like, he did a lot to try to slow him down. And I agree, underwhelming. But, I mean, a lot of it was because he was right. Of his 16 shots in the first game, we talked about that last week. They were all really good shots. He just missed. So the Lakers kind of changed schematically to say, no, we don't want you to have these shots even. Yes and no.
I guess the thing I'm thinking is that, and I realize this, but like when you take a bigger picture, but like Reggie was so kind of one dimensional as a player, and it kind of limited him to his ceiling. Right. I mean, you know, I think as Pacers fans, we always think that he's like, was awesome. You know, went toe to toe with Jordan at his peak at one point, went toe to toe, you know, all those kind of guys.
Well, we're going to change our tune next week when we do game 3, right?
Well, no, I mean, I get he has a nice run here that has 30, you know, 30 something points, but like what I mean is that he still can't do it consistently. Right. I mean, like if he had scored 30 points for 6 straight games, they would have won this series, I think. That's the thing, right?
Yeah, he gets 30 in this game. They win that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is like, I'm thinking like Kawhi that last year, right? Kawhi had like 35 points every night for 6 straight playoff games. That's how they won the series. I mean, he just didn't have that in him for some reason. And I mean,
he was 34. That's part of it.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's also part of it. It's true. I mean, that's true. It took him forever to get to this point, and by this point, he got here. He was too old. But I mean, like, it felt like this was kind of the moment where, like, he should have left everything and anything and been, you know, on the court. And I don't know. I mean, maybe he tried, but it just felt like his shooting was just kind of in his first two games, at least.
Yeah. Certainly the first game was horrible. This game, yeah, a little better, but they were all over trying to slow him down. And that's also why Rose, like, got better matchups and was able to do what he was able to do.
Yeah, but even usually, if you're really you're one of the best players, you just find a way to beat that. Usually,
that's
how you win finals. Right. That's how teams win finals, right? That's how
you're right.
Players in the past.
Well, I'm excited for next week when we can watch him go toe to toe with Shacky Boy.
Yeah, it's probably the best game of the whole series.
Three.
Yeah, I mean,
Game four is the best game of the
series. Well, no, I mean for the Pacers. Sorry.
Oh yeah, game three.
Pacer fan. I mean, you could say the blowout in game four or game.
Well, they blow them out in game five, but, like, they won a competitive game. I think that's your, like, we can do this moment.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, I agree with you.
So, I'm excited for that one.
Yes, me too.
Seeing the wins. I got nothing else today. These are fun. I'm learning a lot more than I thought I would.
I think eventually we need to start doing some 2012 games, some of the old Paul George or Hibbert games.
If you can find those, I would love to do them.
I think we can find some highlights in them at least, or some kind of, like,
if someone has DVR'd the entire 2012 playoffs,
there might be some condensed ones where you watch, like, the 10 minutes everybody scoring at least.
I don't want that. I know. I want to see the misses in the game flow. That's important.
I know.
That's how I get to talk about Zan Tobak.
Yeah, that's fair.
But that's it. These are fun, man. These are really fun.
Yeah, these are pretty interesting to do. I mean, like I said, I've never really watched Chosen Finals, so this is interesting to go back and look at.
Yeah. That is all we got for today's show, guys. Tomorrow we'll be talking about Jalen Rose and why Jonathan Washburn thinks he was the best player in the series. I will fight him on that. I do not agree. We'll talk about they would have played the Lakers this week in 2019-20. Preview that. Adam's gonna do a TJ Warren preview. It's gonna be fun. And we're gonna start something new on Thursday that you'll enjoy, I think. But I'm not gonna tell you what it is yet. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.